Robots Radio presents
Fresh Tomatoes, the movie podcast.
I'm not usually a hat fan, but wow.
Every like a bear and dagger.
I'm really sipping on that dumb bitch juice today, and
yeah, I am. But you know what? Someday I just might grow out of that. But you will never stop being a jerk.
All chocolate cakes are good. You're a fascist.
It's hideous.
It's horrible.
It's home.
Angry white boy, let's go!
Hello, and welcome to Fresh Tomatoes, the movie podcast, the only podcast to don their leg warmers, poof out their hair, and sit down for a maximum ride. That's Simone LaRue.
And that's Chad Ekowitz.
And special guest, returning friend of the podcast, David Ault.
Yes!
Yay!
Woo-hoo.
Yes! Hello! Yay. Hello! Pleasure to be
so
here
happy.
Again.
Oh, we've missed you. We've missed you so very much.
I really have.
Is that why you've walked past me every time I've been outside your door, knocking on the window saying, we'll watch films for gin?
You know I can't afford gin, David. Come on. This is not fair.
Okay. I would have made do with vodka. Make me some moonshine. I don't mind.
Bless.
But yes.
I'm actually the one to come to for moonshine, David. So
that was
your mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Simone's our bootlegger. She's our resident bootlegger. During the pandemic, she was oft buying underhand alcohol because back in the day, South Africa banned alcohol like 1920s America.
Yeah.
So it was beautiful.
Yeah. On and off a couple times. So I got really good at brewing ginger beer. And pineapple beer. And then we made some underground connections. It turns out it's all the rich lady moms who those are the people to get in with.
They just need their meds.
Because they are not getting through this pandemic sober. And yeah, did some dodgy exchanges on side roads. It was very fun.
So many things I could say to that. I'm not going to.
Dodgy exchanges on side roads. You know?
I think that's brilliant. Well done.
So, yeah,
that's,
thank you.
So what did you do? What did you do during the pandemic, David? Were you smuggling alcohol?
Trapped on some podcast with a couple of weirdos who you gave the time of day to.
Well, as we were just talking about before we went on air, I've been tasting squirty tea. So the amazing strangeness that is what people will put in a can for ease of use. And tea isn't really one of those that springs to mind, especially given that the instructions are put enough squirty tea in the bottom of your mug just to sort of cover the bottom, then pour the hot water on, and then stir, and then put the milk in. And it's just... You wonder why not just use a tea bag?
Yeah, it's exactly exactly the same process.
Exactly.
I don't know if you saw this. I think it was a TikTok or something. This American mom, like, bless her.
Oh yes.
Oh, did you see it? Where she was like, "Here's how you make
English tea."
Oh yes.
The first thing she does is put a cold mug of water in the microwave.
You know, already.
It's so painful.
And then I think she adds, like, milk to it before she puts the tea bag in.
Yes, and then there's about five sugars or so afterwards. I think she tips an entire cup of sugar in there.
British tea.
It's unacceptable. I think, this is my theory, is that the Nazis could have won the war if they had just tortured English POW people with incorrect tea making. Just like, what have you figured out the Enigma machine? No, of course we haven't. You guys are too brilliant. Oh, really? And then they pour milk first and then add water afterwards. The Brits would have been useless. They would have won like that.
It's true. It's very true. Oh, dear.
Goodness me. Well, David, being our wonderful, wonderful guest for this episode during Spooktober, posed the idea that we do 80s horror movies this week. So this time we went back in time, even further than Simone and my births, and we went into, very specifically, it just kind of turned out to 1986.
Just really gave David like a small crisis about his age.
You see, this is the horror right here. This is the horror.
We literally, like, guys, guys, because, if you don't usually watch our videos, please watch our videos, because you can watch David fall apart in real time.
I was born at the beginning of the 80s.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
I need more gin.
I would have rather been in your position than ours, David. Honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't worry. So yes, we landed specifically on 1986. With what movie, Simone?
We are doing Maximum Overdrive, Stephen King's first and only directorial foray. And then we are doing Vamp, which I didn't realize had Grace Jones in it. And I was very excited when I found out.
Yes.
I similarly was very excited at that when I saw her, and I just thought, oh my goodness.
That?
And of course, it's that Grace Jones. And she, I won't say anything yet because we haven't started. But
I am excited to see how you guys felt about Grace Jones after you watched the movie with everything that went down. But well, Simone's face looks so concerned. Guys, seriously, if you're sleeping on the YouTube videos, this is your episode to watch it. This is the facial expressions and everything in this, and it's only like 2 minutes in. This is wild. so we will defer to your greater judgment, David, and ask you which film you want to do first. But I think before we do that, let's find out what everyone is drinking. So, David, as our guest, what are you drinking?
Thank you very much. Well, I am drinking a gin and tonic. You can see, if you're on the video, that it is a slightly luminous yellow. And that's because it is Slingsby Marmalade Gin.
That is the Slingsby. Most English thing I've ever heard of. Like, that's delightful.
That's great. Yes, how does it taste? Does it taste like marmalade?
It does. There's a very strong orangey taste to it. It's nice and sour. It's not too sickly sweet. So yeah, it's a very nice G&T.
Very nice.
Chad, when you come visit next year, I would like you to bring me that gin, please. That sounds lovely.
If you want, Simone, I can always just send you one down. I don't mind.
I don't know what the postage looks like. And honestly, given the South African mail, I don't think it would arrive in any state where I could drink it.
have you mixed it with tonic or had? Okay.
I have, yes. I
traditional.
One thing you don't do is drink gin neat, not unless you really want a terrible hangover.
Fair.
Yes.
I feel like if anyone's drinking gin neat, you're like, oh, so they're going through a hard time.
Yes. Yes.
Yes, that's you've just found that your two co-hosts are way younger than you thought they were.
I'm sorry.
And yet, David, you're so much cooler than we are.
Oh,
so
dang.
I don't really.
Oh shit! David just swigged. Oh, it was a trick. He did acting on us. He did an act.
I did.
These theater tricks.
I did. I'm sorry. It was just...
I'm also having a gin, but I made myself a little cocktail today because I had leftover cocktail ingredients. So this is gin with freshly squeezed blood orange juice and a soda water.
That sounds lovely.
So we've basically got the same thing, only blood orange was just sort of incorporated within the gin. Mm. So for ever extra level of redundancy.
I do also want to be clear that I did not personally squeeze the blood orange juice. I purchased it.
Well, I mean, goodness me, David. I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry. How embarrassing.
I know.
I'm very, very sorry.
I'm sorry.
You don't say freshly squeezed blood orange, but not having freshly squeezed yourself.
Someone did it for me.
Oh.
I'm very busy.
Oh, so these are the mummies that you've been meeting on the bootlegging alcohol runs, are they? I don't squeeze the blood orange myself. Exactly. No.
I couldn't possibly squeeze my own oranges.
Neath me.
It's all sexual.
Oh goodness me! It's already gone off the rails. Absolutely. Well, guys, I'm really sorry to break the gin party. If I had gotten the memo, I would be more than on board. But I think you'll be very proud of me because I'm drinking a banana bread beer.
Ooh.
It's very tasty. Simone, I see how hesitant you are by this, but honestly, it is delicious. Like, this is not the first time.
Okay. What kind of beer is it? What are we talking? Like an IPA?
You know, it's a lager. Thank fuck it says it on the
back. It's a lager. Okay.
Yeah. Don't ask me these things. I don't know the difference. Like, it's like the scariest question that anyone could ever ask me. It's like, what type of beer is it? It's the brown kind.
Yes, but how brown?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a light brown. It's a light brown with a delicious yellow label. And it tastes like bananas and it's delicious. Like, this is not the first time I've had it. And I'm a big fan of this beer. very big fan of this.
It has been a while since I've had the banana bread beer. I remember getting it in an advent calendar.
Oh, wow.
Beer advent calendar that I had a few years ago. Oh, yeah, beer advent calendar is brilliant. Just in case anyone wants to get me a birthday present.
I had a gin one for a while. So
a gin one. Oh, yeah, that's good. I have actually ordered myself a beer advent calendar for this year just because.
You deserve it.
Yeah, why not?
Thank you. Thank you. And the banana bread, it's just been so long since I had the banana bread one. I can't really remember, but seeing how enthusiastic you are, Chad, it makes me want to try and try one again.
Well, definitely go for it. They're selling it at Lidl's right now. It's an absolute win. Just, you know, grab yourself.
Oh, right.
Some.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay, well, so David, please tell us, which movie would you like us to review first? Which do you want to speak about initially?
I think that I would like to go for Vamp first.
Excellent.
Because that's the order in which I watch the films. Vamp came first. Fair. And
I think this will be a pretty short and sweet synopsis, mainly...
He always does notes, Simone, and it embarrasses us. He keeps doing this.
How dare you?
Keeps. This is only my second time on the podcast.
Hey, that's more than most people
get.
Okay,
I haven't written a synopsis, so...
When our guests are more prepared than us, I mean, you know it's all downhill from us.
Just remember that no sleep voice actors are for life, not just for October.
Oh!
I do get to pull double duty in June when it's Pride Month, but yeah. I'm available at other months of the year.
Noted.
Yay.
And noted very specifically not to contact you during Pride Month. Is that what you're saying to us?
We did actually have a good Pride Month this year, didn't we? We did a nice little episode. So
yeah, we did the Stonewall movie. I don't know if you had the joy of watching that.
Right.
But
no, I haven't.
Would
good.
Not recommend.
Good. Keep it that way. Right, keep it that way. Definitely not worth your time.
Okay,
from the
good.
Director who brought you Olympus Has Fallen, a...
Oh, say no more. Okay.
Okay. Vamp. So, Keith, played by Chris Makepeace, and AJ, played by Robert Ressler, are rushing a fraternity. They're two, you get the idea that they're always hustling, there's always some sort of angle for them, but they've decided they really want to get into a fraternity to get out of standard dorms, and they promise that they can get a stripper for the party that night. So, naturally, they look up an ad in a magazine because it's 1986, and they're like, oh, this strip club looks good, we think. And with the help of a very rich guy who's the only one who has a car in the whole dorm, Duncan, played by Geta Watanabe, the three of them embark on a trip to this, weird nightclub. Before they go, they stop at a little cafe and meet a bunch of weirdos. They get into a fight with said weirdos, who are clearly vampires.
What?
Including Snow, played by Billy Drago. I know.
Spoilers!
And then they head through to the bar. There they meet Vic, the nightclub owner, played by Sandy Baron, and they see a performance by Katrina, played by Grace Jones. Immediately, AJ is like, this is the one that I think should strip at a frat party, because they totally understand artistic performances like this and not just boobs.
Yeah.
So he goes off with Katrina and promptly has his throat ripped out by her. Then Keith spends the rest of the movie more or less wandering around the club and the street outside the club, followed by a stripper named Amaretto, later Allison, played by Dee Dee Pfeiffer, who insists that she actually knows him from grade school, but he doesn't remember her at all, which is quite rude. He actually runs into an undead AJ later. AJ is like, no, you're my best friend, I don't want to eat you, and kills himself and tells him how to kill the other vampires. They do some more confused wandering around. Eventually, they stumble across the coffins where all the vampires sleep, set those on fire, escape through the sewers, and then just before they're about to emerge into the sunlight, AJ is like, hey, I'm actually not dead. But they kind of go up anyway to just get into the sunlight and make out. And the ending, it's implied to be a romp.
What a romp. Yeah. So tell me, what's your cliffhanger for this one?
My cliffhanger would definitely be this scene.
I can't let you leave. We've got a problem here. Yeah? Well, why don't we go home? We'll call a doctor or something. You don't get it, do you? Home is a million miles away from me now. Home's another planet. I'm a fucking zombie now! I mean, look at me. Watch out, man! You wanna know how bad things are? I love you, Keith. But all I can see right now is food. And I'm starving. You're carrying my next meal around with you in your veins. They got me. They got me real good. Okay. Why don't you take what you need for now? You know, to get you through? That's too much. And you're so nice. Do I look like a mosquito? No. I can't be trusted, buddy. Will you look at my clothes? They're ruined. Do I look real bad? You know, it's just like the movies. You can't see yourself. There's no reflection. It's weird. No pills gonna cure my ill. Jesus, you're really gonna do it, aren't you? You're gonna kill me. AJ, do me a favor, huh? For old time's sake? Sure, buddy, anything. Anything at all. No, not anything. Just one thing. Make sure I don't come back like you, okay? Hey, you think I like this? Or them? They're boring creeps. They don't call them Walking Dead for nothing. Try talking to one of them sometime. I am. Come on, man. Just take me out. Just kill me. I can't go on like this. AJ. Come on! Shit. Can't, can you? Even though you know it works, you can't! It does work, you know. The fire, the wooden stakes, the sunlight. I've got a list right here somewhere. You're ready to die for me, aren't you? You would, because you can't believe that I'm not me anymore. That maybe there's something left, huh? Jesus Christ, maybe there is. Nah. Sorry, pal. Get lost fast. Go on! And remember, you can burn Emma Keaton from the coffins past sunrise. I think you know the other one.
Sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just wanted this to turn into a romance badly.
Oh, there's a lot of sexual tension there. Yeah. I mean, a lot of sexual tension, right?
I wanted there to be. I don't think there was. Like, it was the 80s, so they couldn't really have that in movies. But the subtext, I think, was there.
I don't know, man. I mean, maybe we were manifesting it, but I felt like some serious romance there. Not even just a bromance, you know. It reminds me of the two guys from El Dorado. Like, there was definitely some fucking there. So...
That is not a thing I'd ever considered before, and now I just need to ponder for a little bit. You carry on.
Feel it. Understand it. I know David agrees with me in his silence.
On such matters, of course I agree with you, Chad.
So, initial thoughts then. So how do we feel? Well, that's the first thing I want to discuss is Grace Jones of it all. How did you guys, I know you both said you were very excited when you found out Grace Jones was in this. How did you feel afterwards?
Yeah. I love everything she does. That dance was fucking wild. She looked amazing. It was very cool. I did some reading up on the facts, and the statue that she dances on was actually molded from, like, her boyfriend at the time, Dolph Lundgren.
Okay.
Yes, and then her friend, who's a graffiti artist, painted the statue for her. Like, she actually spent a lot of her own money on, like, her costumes and, like, set pieces and stuff so that, like, it would look really good because it was a very low-budget film. And I think she was great. I think, like, perfect choice to play a vampire queen.
I'm just amazed that they managed to get her for that.
Yeah! You know, I was also... how?
Exactly. It's like, here is this sort of, like, you know, it's a bit campy and it's a bit rubbish, but then there's Grace Jones in the center of it all. And I did my own little bit of looking up, and she doesn't say a word in the entire film. And she wanted that to be the case, so that she was like Nosferatu.
Oh, is that why?
And I thought that was a brilliant, that's what Wikipedia said anyway. But I thought that was a brilliant choice on the part of Grace Jones to bring that level of creepy mystery into the character.
Yeah.
So
no, it was excellent.
Especially because I think any level of dialogue might have, like, ruined it a little bit. Like, there's no dialogue they could have given her that wouldn't have been like extremely campy and overdone.
Yeah, exactly.
I think silent was, like, the right way to play it.
It was incredibly subtle, but also just from I don't know, my business brain is going crazy here, and it's sort of like, I know that if an actor speaks, you have to pay them more than non-speaking actors. So even though I'm sure Grace Jones got paid an awful lot, the fact that she doesn't speak definitely means they didn't have to pay her as much, which is probably how they got
it. I mean, it was her idea, at least.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so, yeah, and I'm sure, like, the business, the execs were just like, yes, absolutely, let's do it.
Fantastic,
brilliant.
Grace. Yes.
But she does quite a bit of roaring, and there's some laughter,
a lot of hissing.
And yeah, exactly. So it's, you know, there's a lot there. She has to run her tongue up AJ's body as well. So
yeah,
you know, there's obviously danger money in there somewhere. Really...
Yeah, that's true. That is true. I think they did a really good job with the sort of makeups and visual effects with this one, too. Like, the vampires, when they turned full vampiric, were, like, really scary. They did a great job with that.
I wondered whether Buffy the Vampire Slayer took some ideas from there.
Yeah,
because when I first saw them and the way that the feral nature of the face had gone and the yellow eyes, I thought, yeah, that's... I could imagine it, when you stake them, they'll just go into dust. In exactly the same way that the Buffy vampires would. And the toenails as well. Yeah. When Grace Jones turns, I don't know if you noticed that. It's there's her face, but then her toenails also grew out. That was bizarre.
Uh-huh. Grim.
That was a fun detail, actually. I was like, oh, I hate that. So it's good.
And then when the girl sat down next to her and had failed in making sure that she picked the transient, and she just went... and pulled out the heart.
Brilliant.
Fantastic.
Absolutely fantastic.
Wow.
Just, is there a better villain than Grace Jones? I don't think so.
No,
and I think that's how they got her in this role. They were like, you play a vampire queen. And she was like, say no more. I certainly won't. And just crushed it.
I mean, we don't know for sure that she isn't a vampire queen, right?
That's
like, we don't know that as, like, an absolute fact.
That's true. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
When she was in... Oh, what's the Bond film? Was it...
A View to a Kill. We reviewed it.
A View to a Kill.
The best fucking movie of all time, because they literally got the words "a view from a kill" in it, and it fucking
was
the best.
It's such a bad... Yeah. It's so shoehorned in. I loved it.
What a view to a kill.
To a kill.
Beautiful. Fucking gorgeous.
But Grace Jones comes out of the mine on the mine cart, and she's in the sunlight, so she's obviously not a vampire as of View to a Kill.
That's true, but we also don't know how powerful she is.
Yeah. She's probably one of the ancients. She's figured it out. She's wearing, like, SPF 5000. You know, she's got, like, a deal with the sun. I wouldn't be surprised. Like, her and the sun have worked something out. Yeah.
Although I think I have to give the just on the subject of her and all of the effects and everything, the way that she died was brilliant, because the way that the face melted, but they'd
the skull,
shown it on the roof, and so the it was dripping, but it was dripping up, and so I thought that was a really good way of doing that. I mean, less so the campy skeleton arm giving the finger afterwards, but the effect of her actually dying.
I fucking love that. That was probably my favorite bit of the film. I love that. Just this fucking skeleton giving a middle finger. Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. Made no sense within the like bigger scheme of the film, but beautiful. Absolutely perfect. Mm-hmm. And it looked good too. It wasn't sort of like stop motion-y. It was just like great. I also really appreciated like the risk with 80s movies. I found is that you know, when you have an ethnic character, they usually sort of make it very stereotypical. And the Asian guy
just
in this
film
was just like
very pleasantly surprised.
A standard guy. Like they didn't trope him up. They didn't do any of that. And I was like, this is awesome. This is great. Duncan is just Duncan doing Duncan things. He wasn't sort of
David's not so sure.
But he was sort of rich and technological and everything.
That's true. But it was made clear that he was paying other people to do his homework.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, they just didn't lean in as hard as we know.
So
they certainly could have.
Another potential problem with 80s films, actually, is technology. Because when you look at the technology and how everything has changed just in the last 10 years, let alone the last 35 years, I was just so pleased to see there was a cassette tape in the opening scene, and there were like six BBC micros or something in the flat where Duncan was. The guy in the hotel had a telephone exchange, like a proper telephone exchange. Brilliant. I loved it. And the lift had an operator with lift music, and I just thought, how did the lift operator deal with having to listen to that lift music all the time?
I mean, he was probably getting paid enough to support his family of four while he was a lift operator, which...
Oh, how crazy.
Imagine that.
Being paid a living wage and not just like, you know...
You'd hope so.
A living wage to work full time.
Must be nice. Late stage capitalism.
Must be nice.
Woo! That's the real horror. So, I mean, overall, for a really campy vampire movie, this actually was pretty banging. Yay! Like, I'm about this film, actually. I thought it was very well done.
I enjoyed it.
I was just going to say, yeah, even from the opening titles and the music that started everything off, and the way that when you had the vamp and then the two teeth came down from even the title, I thought that was really, really a good way to start. And there were some lovely set pieces. There were some brilliant lines. And seeing as I've actually written down some of these lines, I do want to be able to give
you
them.
Did this last time, and I love it when you do
the
this.
Club won't open until after dark. What does that mean?
Like, because normal clubs usually open in the daytime.
to be fair, the term after dark is a bit ambiguous. Like, you know, is it morning? What does after dark mean? Thank you.
I would say after the sun has set, that's after dark.
But then it's just dark. Like, I know they had this debate during the movie. Like, we're literally rehashing this debate, but...
Yeah, that's true. Then there was some hardcore crotch grabbing in the cafe scene.
Yes,
that was a very specific self defense move.
Yeah, overpowering the vampires, which I didn't expect, to be fair. But overpower the vampires and then do some really good crotch grabbing, and it's like, okay,
he really holds on to it for a while.
Yeah. He's really, This goes back to your thinking about sort of them having a romance.
The homoerotic undertones.
Yeah.
Duncan was there saying, I'm in the mood for love. I attract women like flies. And then he also goes on to say, once he's seen a stripper, I think she only just sort of takes off or she just walks past, but she's still relatively clothed. And he says, I'm going to remember that for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Yes, he says that about Amaretto.
Yeah, and I looked him up, and the internet will be along in about 20 years' time. And also, he's one of the voices in Mulan. You know, what's going to be more memorable, Mulan?
Who does he voice in Mulan?
Yeah. I don't know which but he's in there. It's like Mulan or watching a moderately clothed woman walk past. I think he's got his thinking skewed a little bit there. I I have to say, I really appreciated all the sewer lighting.
Yes.
I don't think I've ever seen a sewer so well lit.
I don't understand what happened from the 80s. Like, there was such a great budget for sewer lighting, and it's just gone now.
Yeah.
And that is, I think that's the true problem. I think that's the true problem.
And it was multiple colors as well. You know, you had one that was pink, and you had one that was green, and one that was blue, and
it was fantastic.
You know, more people would spend time down there if it was moodless.
Yeah.
Clearly,
I would certainly spend more time in a sewer if the lighting was better.
Clearly, sewer drain operators back in the 80s were just on coke nonstop, and they were just like, "Do you know what would be good down here?
Yeah.
Rave lighting." And then.
And the fact that Keith, and what a name, Keith.
Great.
Keith was able to knock through a brick wall as well.
Yes.
He just sort of smashed through the brick wall. That probably explained the hardcore crotch grabbing and how he was able to overpower all the vampires.
Fists of steel.
And then the immortal line, which I think probably has to be my favorite line from the whole thing, especially as this was set in LA. Thank God for mass transit.
In LA.
They will regret that in a couple of years.
In LA. Thank God for mass transit. I liked the fact that he had his bow and arrow, and that was his weapon of choice.
And they establish early on in the movie too that he's pretty skilled at it. And you're like, this is a weird thing to bring up, but I mean, it carries through. It's Chekhov's bow and arrow.
Absolutely perfect. Nothing wrong with that.
And I made sure that I didn't engage my physics brain at the spinning car bit.
That transports down like to another part of the town. It was
exactly.
Fantastic. I wish they had said like they did make a reference to Wizard of Oz there, didn't they? They were like, we're not in Kansas anymore. I thought that was brilliant. I thought that was absolutely fantastic.
Because I was thinking, if they are going that fast, that in doing the handbrake turn, they spin for that long. And that far, then they can't have been. They can't have been in LA.
I think this is a great physics question to come up with for your students. Mm. Actually, yeah. Like they want to travel X distance before they go into the handbrake spin. How fast do they
exactly.
need to be going?
Exactly. My final thing, which probably leads on to Maximum Overdrive, but I'll just say it here: the killer lift.
Yes.
Keith goes into the lift and then is stuck halfway in, and the door is smashing in on him, and he's trying to get clear of this homicidal lift.
And there's no explanation
really. None whatsoever. It's just, it's there, it's playing its music, going, come along in, little child, come along in. You can go up to the 13th floor. And he goes in, and then suddenly, vroom! And it's like, grab for the fire extinguisher.
Both movies were in 1986. Are we not sure that there was maybe some like convergence? Like he was just too busy fighting vampires be noticing that also all the machines were like attacking people.
It's a good theory.
What was going on in 1986, David? I mean, you were 6 at the time, so please do tell us like exactly what was happening.
I was 4 for most of it.
Sorry. You were 4. Please do tell us.
What was that like?
Strangely enough, Simone, I can't remember that much of it. I don't remember any particular problem with any kind of comet that was seeding strange machine-altering particles or anything like that. But then again, I could have been...
Strange.
I could have been taken over by a machine then, and I could be completely... I might not know.
Whoa.
That's the thing.
That's why you're so incredible. That's why you are such an incredible
You are an actual
being.
Machine.
I am a
you
machine.
Are, in fact, a machine.
Yes. That's what
I'm
saying.
Love this for
a machine. That's a Back to the Future reference.
Right, so David, what we do now is things have changed since the last time you were here.
I can't cope with this.
Instead of doing... I know. Change. I know. It's been a year. It's been a year where we don't need more change.
No.
And I am sorry to bring this up on you. But what we do now, instead of doing a scene that could have saved it, we talk about a golden nugget of the film. So basically, that one little morsel in the film where you thought was the shining light of that film, that golden nugget that you pull out of the sand and you're just like, yes, this is it. This is that thing. So I'll give you time to think about it, and I'll defer to Simone first, and then we'll come back to you.
Okay.
The thing that really stood out to me, actually, it was like for a movie that takes place in a strip club, albeit one with ulterior motives, it was actually very respectful of the actual like strippers. Like there weren't a bunch of characters written to be super dumb or like slutty or really anything like that. Not that the sluttiness would have been a bad thing necessarily, but like they were actually written like human beings, all of them. And also the choreography that you did see was very artistic.
This is a really cool strip club.
This is just like a standard performance now. I don't know if I would call it a striptease, but okay.
It's more burlesque, right?
Truly. I was just really impressed. I feel like especially, I mean, even today, like people really lean into all the wrong bits if something's like set in a strip club. And they didn't do that. They didn't take those cheap shots. They just treated all the characters like human beings or like vampires, as the case may be. And I thought that was really nice. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, nice.
And I just want to add, last thing, because the main thought that I had was that this movie walked so that Dusk Till Dawn could run, because Dusk Till Dawn came out exactly 10 years later, and I gotta say, it is a much better iteration of two really good friends, in this case brothers, go to a strip club, and it's overtaken by vampires.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you there, Simone. I mean, I don't. Maybe this is just me, maybe I'm the weird one, but I don't like rapists. So, you know, a movie without rapists, with less rapists, I'm all about that. So, yes, couldn't agree with you more. I've got to say the relationship between Keith and the other guy for me is the golden nugget. Their relationship is just so AJ, thank you. It's just so wonderful. Like we all want a friend who's like that and you can banter off of for 2 years talking about bad movies. Hey Simone, that's what you need in your life. It's just that kind of friendship. And it was just lovely to see in this kind of film. And, you know, yeah, very underrated for their sort of level of banter and things. And I think they should be bigger actors than they became, I guess.
Yeah. I would watch a follow-up of, like, them trying to navigate their friendship now that one of them's a vampire. It's, like, a little awkward.
Definitely more sexual.
Meeting your back ally.
Vampires.
Meeting up in back alleys and exchanging bootlegged alcohol.
Exactly.
Like all good friends.
using the cocaine sewer tunnels with their incredible lighting.
So does this make me Duncan, the kind of person that you only bring on specific occasions?
You're not the Duncan. You're not the Duncan, David.
You're definitely not the Duncan. You're definitely not the Duncan.
You're the Grace Jones.
You're the Grace Jones, without question. We've sought after you. We've lusted after you for so long.
And you've said, here's a podcast listenership that we'll really appreciate.
So go on, David. What's your golden nugget for this one?
Well, I will go slightly less highbrow than you two. I just wanted to highlight just another effect that really worked for me. They escaped from the club and they got into the car. And Duncan's in the back, and he says, "Oh, I'm hungry."
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, we know you're hungry, you're Duncan. And then he says, "No, I'm really hungry." And they look in the rearview mirror, and there's no one there.
Great.
And I thought, that
so
really
good.
Worked.
Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. They did it, it was just, like, it's so subtly brilliant, this film. I love it.
It's
I absolutely love
fun.
It. So, and then the final thing that we've changed, but it's not really a change. It's just, it's more of a case of, would you recommend this film, David? Would you go out and actively recommend this film?
Would I actively recommend it? No, probably not. Though it really depends on what people want. I think Vamp is the kind of film where if you wanted just something for the background, or if you were a Grace Jones fan, it's not terrible. It's not a bad film, I wouldn't say. I mean, it's not a great film, but it's not a bad film.
Agreed.
I think it suffers from pacing issues
more than
anything else.
The number of times they have to walk around the streets.
Watching Keith fucking walk back and forth in the strip club looking confused. Yep. Like, I can't, Keith.
Exactly. So yeah, pacing issues, but you know, for an 80s buddy comedy horror, it's not bad.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, not bad. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. How about you, Simone? Would you recommend it?
Yeah, you know, I think like if you're listening to this and you're like, this seems like something I might like, then you should check it out. I don't know if I'd necessarily recommend it to everyone, but anyone who maybe likes like fun, campy 80s horror comedy with like a very specific visual aesthetic, like you could do worse.
You could do much, much worse.
The Grace Jones dance alone.
Oh, yeah. Just look that up on YouTube, guys.
It's spectacular. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so artistically wonderful. You know, not a strip at all by any means of the word, but just artistically fantastic.
She looks great, though.
Yeah, yeah. I'm honestly, I would say I would recommend it to a specific kind of person. You know, I wouldn't go to my law firm and be like, guys, checked out this great movie last night. You gotta watch it. You know, I wouldn't do that. But like, you know, horror fans, people who like terrible movies, like this is actually a pretty solid film from the 80s. And like, worth checking out. I think it's definitely worth checking out. You know, if you're a movie watcher, don't let this pass you by. That's for sure.
And I think the main thing about it is that it is from the 80s, so it is a very 80s film.
Yeah.
And as long as you know that that is what you're getting yourself into, then I think that's fine.
Yeah.
It's not offensive. And the fact that we've already said that it's not overly sexualized, especially not overly leery at indeed anyone's bodies. I mean, in the first scene, you get to see AJ in just his pants.
Yeah, that's true.
Which I thought was actually quite refreshing, and not just from you know. But it's just it's the fact that it remains relatively tasteful. As we've already said, it's not sort of rapey sexual, which it could very easily have been, given the setting.
Yeah, I think it definitely defies expectations.
Yeah, in a really, really healthy way. Like, it's a very healthy 80s film. I'm very impressed. Right, well then, shall we shift up a gear and move into Maximum Overdrive?
See what you
Speaking
did
of pacing issues.
I don't know what you're talking about, Simone. This film definitely couldn't have just been half an hour.
I mean, get through the synopsis and then we'll talk about it.
I mean, again, not very much of a synopsis on this one, right?
No. It's based on a short story, and I feel like a short story, it should have remained.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Okay. So, basically, the Earth has passed through the tail of a comet, and this comet has therefore made all the machines on the planet go absolutely apeshit. Like, literally anything that was sort of vaguely machine, although it is dramatically inconsistent throughout the film, sort of becomes sentient and starts to want to kill human beings. So the movie focuses on a very specific diner based at a truck stop, and you meet a whole bunch of people. So you've got Bill Robinson, who's played by Emilio Estevez, who is the main protagonist. He's sort of one of the technicians at the truck stop. He's sort of this like really cool, nice guy, but he is on parole. So he's completely at the mercy of his boss, Mr. Hendershot, played by Pat Hingle, who is a complete asshole. He basically runs the place with an iron fist. He sort of doesn't pay people very well. He's, you know, smoking and whatever, and he's kind of a dick. You've also got Brett, played by Laura Harrington, who swings by. She's sort of a drifter, and she's just passing through, but because all the machines are going crazy, she ends up at this diner as well, and her and Bill sort of, like, hit it off. They, like, flirt quite outrageously from the very beginning. Then you've also got Connie, played by the enigmatic Yardley Smith, who is the voice of Lisa in The Simpsons, just in case you didn't know that. I know, it's lovely. So she is with her hub, who they've just gotten married. I think it's Kurt, played by John Short, but don't ask.
It's definitely Curtis, because she says that about a million times.
Oh, right, okay, fair.
Curtis!
And they're like newly honeymooned, and they end up on this place too. And then finally, you've got Deke, who is played by Halter Graham, who's this little kid who is sort of, you know, friends with Bill in a strange way. So anyway, all of this starts to go down. Like, all the machines are going a little bit crazy. Like, people are really wondering what's happening. Sort of, you know, one person gets attacked by a turkey cutter. You know, it comes alive by itself and cuts her arm. It's not great. And then this massive toy truck comes into the station, driven by Handy, played by Frankie Faison. And it's got a Green Goblin sort of hood by the radiator, which is a very cool truck. And that seems to be the leader. Like, I want to say that, but I don't know if I manifested that or if that's
they needed like, the something reality. Cool for the cover, so
fair. Yeah. So basically all the people are stuck in the diner, and whenever they get out of the diner, the trucks kind of just murder them. This continues for a while, like everyone's fighting with each other. Eventually they realize that Hendershot has a whole bunch of guns downstairs in the basement, and they use a bazooka essentially to kill a whole bunch of trucks. Eventually they also sort of sign a peace deal with the trucks where they will fill the trucks up with petrol because they're really hungry. You find that out when one of the trucks does Morse code, I want to say. Yeah.
Like, this does happen in the short story, so
yeah. So, and so, yeah, they, like, swear a truce for a little bit until the trucks, until the truck station becomes empty with petrol, but don't worry, there's another truck with more petrol in it that fills it up. Yeah, so it's great, and everything's fantastic. Then eventually, like, the comet passes by the Earth, and everything's fine, and also Brett and Bill kind of hook up, and that's the end. I'm sorry.
Yep.
I'm really, really fucking sorry.
No, that's, and they escape, and then eventually the Earth, they don't even show it, the Earth just, like, gets through the cloud and everything goes back to normal?
Yeah, and it's all fine. And it's, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What's Stephen King, everyone, Stephen King. my cliffhanger has to be this one, and it has to be the scene where they shoehorn in Maximum Overdrive.
How are the lovebirds?
Heart rate is slowing down a little, I think.
That's good.
Mother's helper?
A girl hitching her way down to Florida needs some protection.
Yeah? That's what you're doing?
Yeah. That's what I was doing before every machine in the world went into maximum overdrive.
I love that, because there is no point to any of the dialogue in this film. There's no point to anything really in this film, and yet they somehow managed to get Maximum Overdrive into it, and I'm really proud of them. I'm really, really proud of them.
So I looked up some facts about this movie, and apparently, obviously, this is Stephen King's one and only thing he ever directed, and when people ask why he didn't direct any more movies, he always says, have you seen Maximum Overdrive? Also, obviously, it's not funny, but he was at the height of his cocaine addiction at this time, and it really shows. It really shows. And it is rumored that for a while he wasn't directing because he was in rehab, and his friend George Romero helped to like fill in some of the gaps, so that's why some of the actually like some of the angles and like shots done are like good actually. And he also obviously brought AC/DC on to do the soundtrack for this movie. I don't know if you noticed. I don't know, it was very subtle. But he like
I liked the fact that they managed to get the van on the bridge in the opening scene. Yeah.
And then he offered them a role in the movie as well. He was like, why don't you just be in my movie too? And they were like, no, we're not actors. Thank you so much.
Well, not Stephen King, but he manages to get a cameo.
Oh, that was brilliant. When he got into the film, right in the beginning, I was well proud of him.
Oh,
yeah, I loved that. The bank board saying, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. And then he puts, Stephen King puts his card in the ATM.
Hey, this thing just called me an asshole.
asshole.
So how did we feel?
Well, can I just pop in here just to kick us off with some actual astrophysics.
Of course.
coming along.
Yes, please.
Yes.
Now,
yes, please. Bring this podcast into the highbrow, please.
Now, I'm going to ignore the whole, the tail of a comet business because that's just bollocks. That's just, that'll give you meteor showers.
Fair.
It won't give you anything else. However, let me take you back to the beginning of September 1859.
I'm so happy.
As you may have worked out, I was 2 years old at the time, but that didn't stop me from looking up and ensuring that I could see that during solar cycle 10, which is the sunspot cycle at the time, there was a massive, what's called CME, coronal mass ejection. So the sun, as you know, has, or you may or may not know, has sunspots. This is where the magnetic field gets sort of twisted around. And then when it untangles itself, it releases a whole load of particles in whichever direction the sunspot is facing.
Yeah.
And that is how we get the northern lights. So when it interacts with the Earth's ionosphere, then it sort of shows up as the northern lights. Now, this particular CMA that happened in 1859 was of such a scale that the northern lights, the aurora, were so bright that you could read a newspaper by night.
Wow.
It woke up the gold miners in America because they thought it was morning. It was that bright. But the more important thing was that all of the energy that was discharged fried the telegraphs.
Okay.
Because the telegraphs were the only things with wires going across countries. And so the telegraph operators in America and in Europe, some of them were shocked, as in literally shocked and not just mildly surprised. They got electric shocks from their telegraph machines. The pylons that took the telegraph poles sparked for those 2 days, and you tend to think, okay, well, that's nice, it caused a fair amount of damage, but that was back in 1859. If you think now, if we were hit by something of a similar magnitude,
man,
the number of things around us that have wires.
Oh, man.
And that's just in the house, in the houses that you're in, the place, the workplaces, the fact that you hold a phone to your ear. I mean, my headphones have wires in.
Mm-hmm.
If such a thing were to happen, then anything with wires could...
I mean, even something like a pacemaker, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely. And you just imagine, if it knocks out the power grid for any length of time, how many hospitals rely on that? How much of the banking system relies on that? How much of the supermarkets rely on that for accurate stocking and everything?
Yeah.
Not that that affects us in the UK, because we just don't have any stock in the supermarkets. Hey!
Woo! Woo! Woo!
And it's interesting to know that in 2012, when we were hosting the Olympic Games, one of these CMEs actually happened. It could have been a fully world-changing event. It was sent in our direction, but thankfully we missed it by 9 days.
Wow. Okay.
Wow.
It went through the part of space that we were 9 days previously. So we could have had a literal world-ending event in 2012, which would have made the film that much better.
How dare you?
Exactly.
If anything,
sorry,
I think it would have made it worse.
How dare you attack Jake Gyllenhaal on this podcast? How dare you?
I would
First
never.
Of all, it was John Cusack, not
Jake
Gyllenhaal.
Oh, I'm thinking of Day After Tomorrow. Okay, no, you can attack.
You're thinking of Day After Tomorrow.
Yeah.
No, it's understandable.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, I will defend Day After Tomorrow. I love Day After Tomorrow.
Okay, sorry. That's on me.
Oh, does that meet your high standards
does,
physics accuracy?
But the fact is that these kinds of astronomical events could happen. We could have a gamma ray burst even in a nearby star system, and we would be fried, and we wouldn't know about it.
Damn.
And that's the joy of space.
So when does this script come out for you, David? When are we getting this?
That I'm coming to eventually is that this film could have been 35 years too soon. Because
If
you think about the Internet of Things, all of the smart devices, your smart fridges, your smart cars, smartphones, all of this kind of thing, which could all be taken over by one gigantic AI or a series of linked AIs, then this could actually work as a way of sort of getting rid of the human race. And so from that point of view, if we take all of the trucks out, you know, sod the trucks. But just, I'm sorry, Chad. I can see your face, but I'm just...
He's like, not the trucks.
The trucks are the best bit. They went vroom. But no, my point was, I was going to raise that, and I was just going to say, aren't you basically talking about the film iRobot, where an AI takes over and wants to kill the human race? Like,
there was also...
But that involves robots. We don't have autonomous robots. Okay. At the moment, I'm talking about the kind of the smart devices that we have all through our houses and the systems. So if Maximum Overdrive were redone, but instead of it being a comet or anything like that, but instead it's AI driven, you know, suddenly AI achieves sentience, realizes everything, and then turns on the creators, I think that would make this film, or the premise of this film, so much better.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you.
And that is the science slot.
I loved it.
Thank you. You've just increased our listenership.
I'm terrified now. I'm really scared of life. Thanks.
Yes. If the message is to your listenership, you could die at any time from some random astronomical event and you wouldn't know it.
Or an aneurysm, guys. If you just want to bring it home, you could also have an aneurysm at any time and drop dead. So life's terrifying.
This is really, like, it's an easy solution. If you're worried about sort of like all the wires and stuff in your house, just cut them. Cut all the wires in your house. Just cut them right now. Go
off
to your
grid.
Wires. Cut them all. And you'll be fine. And it'll be all right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you'll be fine from a CME. You wouldn't be from a gamma ray burst, but
yeah. I mean,
what do we do to protect ourselves there? Just like lead
tinfoil hat, Chad.
Because I could do that. That could be fun.
I'm gonna go with.
Okay. Well,
fair enough.
Well, there you go. So, I mean. You know, after Science Corner, I mean, how do we actually feel about this movie? Like, you know, I think it was...
Oh, the movie was not good.
No, the movie is dramatically different from that in the fact that it just was not good. And like, it also suffered from a pacing issue. But in the fact that it was a case of, I could fall asleep for 20 minutes and be completely fine with knowing what was happening.
Yeah, because initially I was like, maybe the problem is, like, that I'm on my phone while I watch this movie. So, like, I was like, Simone, like, let's be, like, professional. Let's put the phone down. Yeah. And then I was like, I need to be doing something else while I watch this movie, because this is actually unbearable. I will say, you know it's a Stephen King one because children die horribly in it.
I did write down the best steamroller death since Roger Rabbit.
That's great.
And I appreciated the injury from the soda can hitting the coach full in the face.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was quite brutal.
That was gory.
Yeah.
He also had to cut a scene where, like, he, you know, the kid goes under the steamroller, and he initially wanted it set up so a blood bag exploded at the, you know, as the mannequin's getting steamrolled, and then, like, the steamroller would almost look like a printing press, printing this, like, pattern of blood across the field.
That's cool.
But then, I was like, that's actually dope, Steven. Like, good idea.
Good.
But then the blood bag exploded early, so it just looked like the mannequin's head was exploding, or, you know, a child. Stephen King was like, actually, that's so much better. And the censorship bureau was like, you absolutely cannot show a child's head exploding while it gets run over by a steamroller. So they had to cut it.
I love that.
You know what?
You can't show a child's head exploding, but you can have
this. This is just the nanny state going too far. This is PC culture just taking a giant shit.
Just let us see
everything.
A child's head explode.
What
guys?
Are they gonna do next?
Oh dear! The fact that it would the head would be too much, but the rest of the body, yeah, that's fine. Print it all
the
over the
press, that's fine.
Yeah. Print it as many times as you want.
Oh,
Although I have to say that the flying melons on the bridge and the amount of screaming that went over these flying melons, yes. I thought that was quite...
As AC/DC plays soothingly in the background.
Yeah.
You can tell that this was a coke dream because that is the only place where AC/DC as the score for the film would work. Like, I'm pretty sure when Stephen King approached AC/DC, they were just like, AC/DC themselves were just like, are you sure? Like, are you really like
the whole soundtrack, not
more.
Like a specific scene or like an end credit, like the whole thing. And he was like, yeah, absolutely, let's go.
You guys are an orchestratic fucking geniuses. Just let's go, let's do this. We love you, Kiss. Outrageous. Sorry, AC/DC, not Kiss.
He might have called them Kiss accidentally. Who's
I wouldn't
to
be
say?
Surprised. That was the issue. He thought it was Kiss the whole time, but it turned out to be AC/DC. to be fair, though, upon letters. Saying that, I really did enjoy the murder sounds because, like, they had a light motif of the AC/DC murder sounds, and it was just like this very sort of reminiscent of. Psycho. Thank you. You know, it was sort of like I felt sort of hints of Psycho in that with the leitmotif, and
it's
I really
generous.
Enjoyed this.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel too bad ripping on this movie because Stephen King himself is like, no, it really was quite bad.
Yeah.
And I remember the short story, I think it's called Truck.
Yeah, okay. Trucks.
Trucks. There we go. Mm-hmm. I don't think it makes mention of a comet or meteor at all. Like, that was added in for the benefit of the movie. It's just, like, a weird event where, like, suddenly trucks become sentient and force humans to, like, feed them forever. And it's quite a grim ending where they just see this never-ending line of trucks down the road that they realize they'll have to, like, keep feeding until the end of time or whatever. And there's no resolution. And I guess that was too bleak for cinema. So instead it had to be... a comet, and then thank God the aliens shot down a UFO at the end, according to the closing screen. So problem averted, crisis solved.
You know, like I like a movie where things like resolve themselves really nicely, but it's one of those where you're looking at this and you're just like, huh, okay, I guess I did spend the last hour and a half watching that for. This cheap ass resolution is like I felt this way as well after like War of the Worlds, the Tom Cruise one, where it was just like, oh, when germs got them in the end, and I'm like, oh thanks,
yeah.
Thanks for the payoff.
But that,
thanks for the payoff. That's
the original great. Ending, though.
It is, but I could see how it would work as a book. I don't see how it works as a Tom Cruise film. That was my concern.
Unless Tom Cruise actually shrank himself down to the size of a bacterium and gets injected into the brain of the mother alien.
Yeah, and just punches. And then just punches the brain. Non-stop.
I mean, to be fair, that's the ending of Suicide Squad, so.
That's also true.
Spoilers!
Also, you don't really have to shrink down Tom Cruise that much to get him inside.
That's
a
true.
Brain.
That's very
short
true.
Person
very, very
jokes.
True.
Tom Cruise
we
shots.
We don't know how tall
y'all.
David is. That could be really mean.
Dude, I'm 6'2", don't worry.
Oh, okay. We're good. We're all tall here.
Oh, I'm not
You're
that
actually
tall.
The shortest one
I'm,
here, Chad.
I'm very short. I'm very short, so. That's why I took a pot shot at Tom Cruise, because he's shorter than me. So that's fine.
Okay. Okay. As long as it makes you feel bigger.
I'm tall.
Who's the bigger man? Yes.
So I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I've said everything I need to say about this movie. David, I'm sure you've made notes.
Yeah, please.
There are notes. I said to my friend Mark Nixon, who I do Shadows at the Door, the podcast with, and I said, I'm going onto this podcast. It's about finding the good things about terrible films. And he said, right, what are you watching? And I said, Maximum Overdrive. And he said, good luck finding anything with that. And so that was basically my introduction to the film. So I thought, okay, I'm going into this with a very low bar.
Sure.
Good.
I did agree with what various sites said about the dialogue being clunky and pacing issues. The fact that when the bridge is lifting, and everyone's on it. The bridge operators, 5 minutes later, go outside and just shout at each other saying, "We got a situation! We got a situation!" Instead of going inside and actually trying to do something about it.
Yeah.
There were some lovely things, like diesel was $1 a gallon.
Oh, remember.
You don't see that. the fact that the guy in the video game arcade just from nowhere says, "Yo, mama!"
Yeah, that just, was spectacular.
The Bible salesman who is drinking while driving with casual sexism with the creepy, let's put the hand on the knee and, this is, well, can't we go back to the good old days where men could do whatever they wanted and women were just demure, nice things that would allow themselves to be... one of the best lines for me was Lisa Simpson shouting, "Curtis, are you dead?"
Yeah.
I loved every single line she said. She was the shining light. I will say maybe she was my golden nugget for this movie. Yeah. Like, she was just...
She was
the
great.
Only character worth paying any attention to in the
Absolutely.
Whole movie.
Absolutely.
I told you not to use these seatbelts. These seatbelts are horrible.
Oh, she was yeah. spectacular. Their relationship was just so perfect. Oh, it was so good. It was so, so good.
When she's like not letting him go out to save the guy and they're like, "Oh, what if it was your husband?" She's like, "But it isn't."
Yeah. Great.
Love it.
Like, flawless logic. Good on you. Good on you. Yeah.
You just got to wonder what set of circumstances led to those two getting married.
Yes. Yes.
I want that love story.
Yeah. That's the follow-up to Maximum Overdrive. Mm. Maximum Overdrive 2, the Maximus. I love it.
Send men just like a bossy lady.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank
maybe.
God.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm kind of thinking that... I'm kind of thinking it was probably some sort of setup through some sort of religious cult.
Yeah, they did look like that. They did dress that way, didn't they? Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
But,
I wanted it to be true love.
Well, I mean, it could be true love. Like, even if it's a cult, yeah. Simone, you don't
know
if it is
true
love.
They found love in a hopeless place.
Yeah. Oh, Rihanna. So, since we moved on to golden nuggets then, David, what about you? What's your golden nugget for this bad boy?
Well, I have kept back the last thing that I wrote on here as my golden nugget.
Strategic.
Because forewarned is forearmed, both. I have to say that one of my favorite things about this film was the ice cream van going around playing its merry tune with no driver.
Yes.
I thought that was
very
especially
sinister.
Spooky. And that was a really nice touch.
Stephen King got something
I would say even the whole scene where Deke is like riding his bike through the neighborhood and just like seeing like glimpses of the carnage, I thought was like a really fantastic scene.
And the sprinklers coming on, and then when he turns around, they go off.
Yes, turns around and they stop. Yes, very, very good. That was an artistic genius move.
Yeah.
Like, very, very
I have to assume that Romero was the one who organized that. But maybe, I don't know, to Stephen's credit,
For me, to be honest with you, it is the ACD soundtrack.
Oh, really?
ACDC soundtrack.
That made it for
It just
you,
brought
huh?
me so much joy. Because, like, when is that a thing? Like, apart from Iron Man, like, when is that an actual thing? And you know what? I couldn't help but smile whenever I heard just that fucking shredding guitar throughout this fucking movie.
And then
like,
the movie, the credits roll and Shook Me All Night Long starts playing, which has nothing to do with anything.
Perfect. What's wrong with that? Absolutely perfect in every way. Couldn't go wrong. It made me smile. No. It was so good. Yeah. So, I mean, I think I know the answer, but would we recommend this?
I think it's interesting as like a curiosity. You're like, hey, if you want to see that time Stephen King tried to direct something and he was not doing well, by all means, check out what the inside of his brain looked like at the time. And I'm so happy he's doing better now. But otherwise...
It's definitely one of those films where you hold it up as an example of, you know, sometimes talented people can try their hand at something and not do as well in a different field.
Very true.
Yeah.
And you can still, you know, it's still out there. It's as we say, a curiosity. It's probably a bit of a cult film. But, you know, it's... It's to say that even though you don't feel confident or you may not be quite as good at something, just give it a go. You can't fuck it up as much as Stephen King did.
You know what? That's beautiful.
That's actually a really nice life lesson. Yeah, yeah. Whatever you do in life, guys, you cannot fuck it up as much as Maximum, as much as Stephen King.
And he's fine. His career is thriving afterwards. That's gonna,
yeah, exactly.
He's smashing it. Yeah, that's really good. Oh, thank you, David. That's lovely. Oh,
physics and life lessons.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I would never recommend this book to anyone, really. Honestly, like, it's never going to happen.
Unless,
not
like,
a chance.
Maybe you met someone who was like, you know what I love? Sentient trucks. I love a movie about a sentient truck. Buddy.
Oh, boy. Do I have... Hey, have you guys seen Cars? I've got something that's even fucking better than Cars. Wait till this... Wait till you watch this. It's going to blow your fucking mind. well, David, thank you so much for joining us for the 80s week. We really appreciate you coming back.
Thrilled. Thank you very much. It's whenever you want a podcast guest, you know.
You know, maybe, how do you feel about Christmas movies,
Give me them all. Yeah, let's go for it.
Excellent. Yeah.
Easter films. Oh,
we'll see you in a month.
Okay, well, yeah. So, David, at the end of the podcast now, we do very much similar to what we did before, but now we call it something different because we like to rebrand. It's what we do. So now we speak about our gratitudes. So the things that we are grateful for in this week that has just passed. So, Simone, why don't you go first? Show
David
the ropes.
What am I grateful for? I am grateful for... Oh, Ethiopian food. What a great cuisine. The fact
very
I fucking
specific,
live
fair.
Like
yeah, okay.
As you know, my parents lived in Ethiopia for a while, so I got to visit them there a couple times. But like, what a fantastic food! Like, what a great cuisine! The fact also that like I'm all the way at like the southern tip of Africa, and I can still like just go like drive 20 minutes and have Ethiopian food, and you all the way up in the UK can also presumably drive a small distance and get Ethiopian food is very cool. It's so underrated and so delicious for meat eaters and vegetarians alike.
That's great. I'm really happy for you. So what's your favorite Ethiopian dish then?
I like shiro, but honestly, okay, anything smothered in berber spice. It's like a split pea, like chickpea stewy. It's just delicious. And then obviously, like, you've got your injera that you dip in it. I don't know how to explain it. It's just
you'd be great on a cooking show. Just, you know, it's this really, you know, what is this
I'm
food?
Really
it's,
more,
it's
I'm
delicious.
Really more about the plating. I can't be describing.
Yeah. Simone, what are you making today? Sorry, this is Australian MasterChef. I just wanted to make that clear.
Sure.
And then you're just like, it's delicious. And then it's
just so
silence
just
in the studio.
Just try it.
You just shout at them. Yeah, yeah. So how about you, David? What are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for, I know it's coming back to family and friends, but I'm going to get to see my dad for the first time in a while. So I'm looking forward to that. So on Halloween, because it's not quite Halloween yet, I don't think. Is it Halloween yet?
No, episode comes out, it'll be like the 26th or the 27th, somewhere
okay,
around there.
That's fine then. So coming up on Halloween, I'll be able to see my dad, who's coming up north to spend a few days. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Nice.
Looking forward to that.
Oh, lovely. Yay. Mr. David Alt. Mr. Daddy Alt.
Mr. Daddy Alt, yes.
Mr. Daddy Alt. That's great.
I've never been called that before, thankfully.
Yes.
Not in polite circles.
Not in polite circles, yes, that's true.
That's
and what about you, Chad?
You from now on.
I'll take it. That's fine.
What about you, Chad?
I'm very grateful for lions. Just the ability. Yesterday, I slept till 10:30.
I thought you meant the animal, Chad.
I thought he did.
I fucking love lions.
What is this story?
Guys, fuck. I love lions. They're so cool. Have you heard them roar? Have you seen that
majestic mane?
Jesus.
And they shake their mane.
Shit, guys. Yeah. Have you seen the film that they made about lions, Lion King? And then the follow-up, Lion King 2, Simba's Pride? The
documentary?
Yes. Shit, guys. Lions are fucking rad.
So here we are in the savannah. And, oh my God, can you see those lions? What the fucking fuck? Are they not fucking majestic? Those fucking amazing lions. And yes, I think we can actually see them fucking. How fucking majestic is their fucking? It's all fucking amazing. This is what I spend 50, 60 years of my professional life doing, and I am so fucking stoked.
Oh, man. There's no way to recover from that. That was stunning. Thank you for that, David.
We don't deserve you, we
do
truly.
Not. We do not. Oh, my God. How perfect you are. That is, I've changed my mind. It wasn't lions or lions. It's now David. I'm very grateful
it's
for David.
David
is the most incredible human being that we've ever met. But no, I slept till 10:30 yesterday, which, you know, is unheard of for me. So I was unbelievably happy to have that opportunity. So yes, made me very, very happy. Just a good lion and then a cheeky cup of tea. In bed, not a canned cup of tea, of course, an actual real cup of tea.
No.
Proper cup.
No squirty tea
no
for
squirty
you.
Tea for me, thank you.
No,
very much,
no water heated in the microwave.
None of that nonsense. So yes, that is my gratitude. That I'm just very grateful for the ability to just have a nice lion. It was perfect. Yeah.
Thrilled for you.
Absolutely fucking stoked.
Absolutely jazzed. So, Simone, end of October, we've had a great Halloween, it's been wonderful, spooky season has just been great. We've really gone back into the history, the annals of horror movies this time around, which I've really enjoyed. It's been a good backtrack.
We have.
But now we're moving into November, so what the hell are we going to do, Simone? Any ideas?
Oh, Chad, I'm going to ruin your day.
Yes! Fucking do it! Fuck me up, son!
You know, I feel like now that this trilogy is complete, we can finally give it the attention that it has needed from
us. I know what you're going to say. I'm so excited. Okay.
I think we need to do the kissing booth.
Oh, okay. I did not know where you were going
with
that.
Wrong.
I was so
I
wrong.
Knew I was going to ruin your day.
Okay. That's fine. So we're doing all three?
It's all filmed in Cape Town. You'll be thrilled to know.
Okay.
But they pretend it's LA.
Fine.
Obviously.
Yeah.
You'll see the beautiful lush lawns of our old university being passed off as a posh high school.
Fair.
You'll see some very privileged white kids stressing about decisions that they have to make that aren't hard at all.
So University of Cape Town, basically. Like, no different from what we went through.
Yeah, really. It's our whole university experience.
Yeah. So we're doing, I just want to make this like 100% clear, we're doing all three, right? Like you want me to watch all three of these films
all
this
three
time, right?
Booths. I want you to melt your brain.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm jazzed. Fucking stoked.
Look, I'm going to fall,
you're
I'm probably going to fall.
Out the other side of this thrill.
I'm probably going to fall in love with them. Like, let's not play around here. Like, I'm definitely going to fall in love with them, but...
Oh, yeah, you'll definitely, you've got a type. We've got a similar type, and I know exactly who you'll have a crush on.
Okay, fair. David, have you seen any of these Kissing Booth films? Are you a fan? Are you a fae?
I have never even heard of it.
Probably for the best.
Yes. No, yeah. I do not know.
No,
that's impressive that you've
there are better
them.
Movies to experience the majestic landscapes of Cape Town passed off as L.A.
Wow. Okay. What a way to end Spooktober. Fine. Okay. I'm okay with that.
The real horror.
Yeah. The real horror. Well, David, have you had fun today?
I have had an absolute ball. Thank you both very much for letting me back on.
No, thank you. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for coming.
Goodness me, we love having you here. I mean, the
you
second
only
that
have
I said
to ask. Please.
We will, but...
I'm just waiting for, like, the moment that we message you and then we get a response from, like, your agent who's like, actually, Mr. Alt is very busy right now. He couldn't possibly... he doesn't get out of bed for less than 3 bottles of gin. Yeah. So if you can't afford that...
Which we can't. But, like, it's sort of like the way we feel about it is like you're like a really busy dad and we as your kids are like, oh, come play with us. But also we don't want, you know, to disturb you because dad's working all the time and
cats in the
cradle. I've got some issues. But, you know, we do want to ask you all the time, but, you know, dad's busy and we don't want to bug him.
You the best thing to do is just ask. The worst thing I can say is no. Or can I do it next week?
Oh, but you don't understand, David. That would crush us. Like, I don't think you understand how bad we are at rejection. Like, we both are. Like, that would be the end of us. So, you know, Just be aware okay. of that. Before
so you. I will never say no to you two. I will always endeavor to make time.
That's a healthy thing to say
make
to children.
Make time for you both. Because I believe in proactive parenting.
That's great. Look at that. Look at that. That's beautiful. And what a note to end on. So, guys, well, thank you so much. Sorry, you had a bit.
Oh, I was just going to say, I promise that we'll see him over Christmas then.
Yes, no, we definitely will
I
see him
I feel like
over
he'd
Christmas.
Have some very valuable insights on Vanessa Hudgens' performances in the various Christmas movies.
Oh, yeah. She's got that locked down. Like Mariah Carey's got the Christmas music game locked down. Mm-hmm. You know, Vanessa Hudgens has got the Christmas movies. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know that there is a lot. There are a lot of Hallmark films which are just essentially the same.
Oh, yeah. All of them. All of them.
But the nuances are
and getting Rob Lowe in.
As to whether the guy's called Fred or whatever. Yeah.
Oh.
Don't you worry, David. We will pick out
some
choice movies.
We know how to get them. We're very, very good at choosing Christmas movies. You know, we're like sommeliers, but for Christmas movies. It's our niche.
Excellent. I look forward to it.
Well, guys, thank you so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. What are you guys watching? How has everyone's Halloween been? What are you going to be doing over the November period, that weird period between, you know, Halloween and Christmas where nothing really happens, but also sort of like things are building up and building up, and now we're getting into this.
Americans have Thanksgiving.
Oh, fuck so Thanksgiving.
Fine.
It's the genocide of the natives. Like, we're not going to talk about that. Like, let's fucking not.
I have my birthday.
David, I'm so sorry. When's your birthday?
Oh my god!
November!
Yeah, I got that from the general context, but when specifically?
I'll tell you off mic.
Okay. Okay, fair enough.
But it's fine. That's fine. You can say that it's in the nothing part of
no,
the
No, now it's everything, David. It's everything. November is
Oh no, Chad. It's too much. It's too much now.
We're both born in September, which is truly the nothing part of the year. So.
No, to be fair, I know a couple of people that are born right at the beginning of January, which has to be the worst.
Oof, yeah.
I know one person that was born on the 2nd of January, which I think has to be the worst day to have a birthday.
Yeah. No one
not like
to
you
out.
Can Exactly. It's not like you can count down to your birthday through New Year's Eve into New Year's Day. No, it's the 2nd.
No.
No one
Everyone's
wants the 2nd
tired.
Of January.
They're exactly. hungover. Exactly. They're broke.
Yeah. No one wants to hang. That's awful. Oh, gosh. Yeah. No. Okay.
Buddy.
But that's not me.
That's true. You're born in the best month of all time. It's now the best month of all time is November. You know, what are you guys doing to celebrate November being the best month of the year? And please do write in and tell us. And where can they do that, Simone?
They can talk to us on Facebook or Instagram at Fresh Tomatoes Podcast, on Twitter at Fresh Tomatoes MP. They can email us birthday wishes for David at freshtomatoespodcast@gmail.com. David, would you like to plug any places where they can just wish you happy birthday directly? Or
well, you can find more information about me at davidalt.co.uk. I am on Twitter at davidalt because I changed that this year and it's so much better than what it was. I'm not on Facebook or Instagram, but check out other podcasts, obviously No Sleep, but if you're into more sort of British creepy horror with come for the creepy horror, stay for the queer northern banter that happens afterwards.
Brilliant.
That's Shadows at the Door, the podcast, so that's another place, but there's many more. You can find links to them all via my website,
and we'll also link to them all down below in the show notes,
all the way down below. That's brilliant. Well, guys, thank you so much for listening, and as we say at the end of every episode, we love you and there's nothing you can do about it.
We love you and there's nothing you can do about it.
We love you and there is nothing, fucking majestic or otherwise, that you can do about it.
I love it. I'm so glad you did that. Goodbye, everyone.
Stop doing better at our podcast than we do.
Hey, I'm Tom.
And I'm Stuart.
And we're from the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast.
We talk about all things connected to D&D lore.
And we're on the Robots Radio Network. So if you're into Dungeons and Dragons or you're into lore, then come check us out. You can find us on any podcatcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get podcasts.
Roll more dice.
That's the Dungeons and Dragons Lorecast.